From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on April 25th in a town on Long Island called Elwood. The Elwood School District sent a letter home to parents. That letter explained that the district had decided to eliminate the traditional end-of-year school play, a big performance. Students needed more time to focus on academic rigor, more time on college preparation. One other detail, this was the kindergarten school play. The district decided that five-year-olds need more time with college prep. That story has sparked reaction from across the country. But in that letter, the district administrators stressed that they're not the only ones. Other schools are cutting back on recess or physical education. The pressure is on to raise academic standards, even if that means taking young children off the playgrounds. Is that healthy? We want to hear from you. We'd love to know if your district has changed or eliminated recess or is talking about it. I'd love to hear what your own recollection of recess was like from your childhood and what you'd like to see it like for your kids or your grandkids. We've got a panel that will explore this issue this hour. But first, before we get there, we want to talk about what we hope are the final hours of our pledge drive, though I don't want us to stall. Randy Gorman, our news director from WXXI, is here.
Thanks, Evan. We do want to keep up the momentum. Of course, we're hoping to finish the drive early before the end of the week. And again, one of the great topics, one of the great places in Rochester, a lot of us have visited the Strong Museum. I was just talking to Shane, a public relations person. They have something for those of us who remember pinball machines, a great exhibit coming up. A little off the topic here, but I mean, it is such a great
resource. We can talk about pinball machines whenever you like.
I would love to. It's such a great resource to have the Strong here. And again, this is one of the shows, one of the few shows in this area where you get to have an in-depth discussion of just the whole idea of play, something that the Strong Museum has talked about for a number of years. I know next hour we're talking about some of the recent school budget votes and one that didn't get passed in West Irondequoit. But again, it's these in-depth kind of discussions that we want to continue, and we need your help to continue the kind of programming you expect on WXXI. You can make a contribution very easy online at WXXI.org, or if you're listening to us on WEOS, our new home for the midday show now, you can go there at WEOS.org, and whatever you can contribute, it is appreciated. We want to continue the kind of quality programming you've been used to and talk about things like the Strong Museum and the importance of play, but to do that, we need you to become part of this effort today.
Can I offer a personal story that may seem like shilling for my own company, but it's a true story. Mm-hmm. I had a friend say to me the other day that she passes the coffee shops, et cetera, and all, has a weakness, will stop in, grab a latte a few times a week. And she said basically when she heard about the pledge drive, she thought, if I don't do that one day a month, I take about one latte a month, that's probably somewhat better for my health. And $5 a month for the community, she feels like she's investing in the community.
And I do this. I do, you know, I splurge once a week for the expensive coffee drink. And like you said, it's about $5. Why not just say, hey, you know what? I'll take one off a month and contribute it to a place that I can get really lasting information. I mean, I like my latte, but it never teaches me anything, except that it costs a lot of money.
Yes, it
so,
does.
So be a part right now. Either give us a call, or you can go online at WXXI.org, WEOS.org as well.
Thank you, Randy. Nice to see you. We appreciate that. And that gives us a good jumping off point for our discussion this hour. Again, we do want to hear from you. And if you want to join our conversation on the value of play, recess, so I want to know what your districts are doing out there. We are hearing that occasionally school districts are feeling the pressure to cut down on recess or phys ed time, et cetera. They want more time for students, even starting in kindergarten in the classroom. The concern about standardized testing, making sure they're preparing for those tests. It's 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255, no matter where you are in the country or locally. And if you are in Rochester and you're used to the old number, it's 263-WXXI, 263-9994. I want to welcome to the program this hour Ellen Leopold, who is a social and emotional learning consultant with the Children's Institute. Ellen, nice to see you.
Thank you for having me here.
Debbie McCoy is the Director of Education for the Strong Museum. Our parents out there might know it as the Strong National Museum of Play. It's the Strong Museum. And Debbie, it's great to see you.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Well, we started the hour mentioning this school district down on Long Island that said, look, they're under pressure from parents. The administrator said they have to do it. They've got to get even kindergartners, 5, 6 years old, in the classroom more often, even if that means cutting out a big school performance or a big school play. We've seen other districts talk about recess, et cetera. I'll start with you, Debbie. I know the Strong obviously feels very strongly about the value of play. When you hear about these trends and school districts thinking about a recess, what comes to mind first for you?
Well, it is
really the tendency for pre-K and kindergarten to become more academic increasingly. And we know there are pressures on schools to with more standardized testing, but it is counterproductive to cut play out of children's, both out of the curriculum and time for unstructured play,
What if they say, hey, they can play when they get home from school, Debbie? What's the big deal? They got plenty of time in the afternoon when they get home.
Well, we know that play supports children developmentally all across areas of development. So while children are at school, they need opportunities to interact with other children, to collaborate with others, to learn positive ideas about themselves as a learner. All of those things are important. It also, the research supports the idea that play enhances learning by increasing children's ability to pay attention and really improves academic performance as well as improving behavior in classrooms.
Ellen, I'll ask you the same question. And by the way, for our listeners who are already on the line, thanks for joining the conversation. We will get to you in just a second. I'll let Dave, our engineer, know. Our little board here is being a little wonky. I can see the calls, but I cannot switch over to see who you're telling me is on the line. So I'll let you talk. There we go. Okay, thank you, Dave. Dave will communicate that with me. We'll get to you in a second, June, and some others. But Ellen, same question for you. When we see this trend, and again, I don't have concrete numbers on every single district locally, but we're going to hear later this hour from a local superintendent who says, yes, there's pressure on academics starting at age 5. What do you think?
Absolutely. I see it. And I work for the Children's Institute. Our mission is social and emotional health for children, and we support all practices that support our mission. And over the last 10 years, I have seen some changes that are concerning. And primarily, I see more stress in from our teachers in trying to get information in, tasks done.
They're nervous about standardized tests, even at that young age, aren't they?
Well, they're nervous about the testing, but also they're being asked to do more in less time.
Yeah.
And so the time that they see as flexible would be that free time. But as Debbie and I know, and as you know, with a two-year-old, free time is important learning time for children. It's important in terms of social skills. It's also important in terms of academics. You brought up recess and sort of throughout to the listeners what's happening in your areas. And I can tell you that in studies starting in the late 80s, we had about 90% of school districts reporting that their kids had recess. As of a few years ago, it's about 40%.
40% of school districts?
Yes.
Wow, what a difference in a couple of decades.
Having, it's in 2011, 40% of school systems had a recess policy that recess had to happen. It doesn't mean that recess isn't happening, but it doesn't have to happen, and in New York State, it doesn't have to happen. But in 2010, the CDC reviewed 8 studies, and they wanted to see what the relationship was between physical activity and academic performance, and they found that they looked at 2 areas, concentration and on-task behavior, which you and I know has a huge amount to do with learning back in the classroom. So the kids are learning actually during play and recess. But back in the classroom, they found that the kids were concentrating better, they were more on task, and there were no negative associations with academics. So the time that those kids had off, and there's just scores of studies that support this, the time that those kids have off did not negatively affect their performance, their academic performance. In fact, it enhanced it.
All right. So we're going to be talking more about the research. I think that's such an important part of this, not only what's happening here, what's happening in other countries around the world, how they structure time. We're going to be getting into more of that as we go throughout the hour. Let's grab our first call, June in Brockport. Go ahead, June.
Hi. I really think they have it backwards by eliminating recess. I know that studies show that physical activity integrated with the school day, in fact, increases scores. There was one study that was field tested where a school that was last in math scores was first after they integrated having treadmills, and this was in the high school. But it's unfortunate that they keep looking at it in this way, because it's really just the reverse of what all the studies show.
Go ahead. Let me ask Ellen to jump in on that point. What do you think?
Physical activity does breed and breaks, so does breed more attention later.
Mm-hmm.
We build breaks into all kinds of work because we know that people lose focus and that a break helps them regain focus. So, for example, the long-distance trucker has a break and must have a break.
Yeah.
So
we should want every truck driver to have breaks. Absolutely.
And children are no different, but they're also going to try to grab those breaks on their own. And so the teachers are going to be spending a lot of time with behavior that's going to be labeled inappropriate behavior, but really it's just childlike behavior to grab some additional time. So I support what the listener is saying, and there is a lot of research that supports physical activity with increased academic performance.
Yeah. Well,
go ahead, Jim.
So when you get the blood flowing to the brain, it's going to work better. And as you say, you just get all that extra kinetic energy out so that you can sit still and concentrate.
I think it's a great point, June, and I think about my own son who's two. He already knows how to operate a smartphone better than my mother, and that's the world he's growing up in. I can't change that. But technology is slowing down some of the physical activity that kids have, and if we see schools also slow down some of the physical activity, that seems to be a snowball effect. And, you know, Debbie, I think Ellen's point is such an important one. Some people look at play as if it's wasted time, that it's not valuable time. What would you say to somebody who says, okay, play is the time to you kind of do whatever, but it's not valuable, but we'll let you do it anyway? What's the response to that?
Well, I'd also like to make the point that it doesn't need to be either or, play time or learning time. Many times in classrooms, and the example you gave of the show that was canceled, performances and dramatic play opportunities or integration of the arts can often enhance the learning that's happening and make important connections between subject matters. So there's recess or free play, where children are completely in charge of the agenda, which is very important, where they're making choices and not being managed all the time by adults. But there's also playful learning that's important in terms of rich curriculum.
I want to read a note here that I saw online, just in one of the many Facebook groups and circles that I see. This is 1 week old, last Tuesday, I think, the 13th, from Florida. This is from Lee County, Florida, and there's a petition among parents to save recess there, and they're writing to members of the Lee County, Florida Board of Education saying, "We, the undersigned, current and future parents and caregivers of students in our school system, taxpayers and residents of Lee County, petition the Board of Education to adopt a school curriculum in our school curriculum, a scheduled time for all students in kindergarten in grades 1 through 8 to have daily recess periods 5 days per week. We support this petition, because a growing number of elementary students in Lee County, Florida, no longer have daily recess." That's just one example. So you're seeing what is, I don't know that trend is the right word. I don't know exactly. I think every district is a little bit different, but there's certainly a de-emphasizing of recess or a ramping up of academic rigor in favor of some physical playtime. And Ellen, when it comes to ages, you know, sometimes we think about kindergarten. Sometimes we think about first grade, second grade. And then I wonder if districts view, okay, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, you need less time outside, more time in the classroom. Is there any kind of reason to think that there is a cutoff at an age group where we should start having kids more indoors and less playtime during the school day?
Well, there are so many issues here, so many. And I think we should touch on this later, but it would be a missed opportunity to not talk about the childhood obesity issue.
Yep.
And the important work that this community is doing, Rachel Pickering, Steve Cook, the Children's Agenda, and of course the Children's Institute and many other organizations. But is there a time when kids shouldn't have recess? No, there is not a time. We should have recess. We should all have recess at some point. It helps us refocus. It helps us get back on task. There was a study of fourth graders that found that their teachers reported them less fidgety and more on task after they had 15 minutes of recess. This was especially true with kids who had hyperactivity. We spend a lot of time coming down on these kids, trying to give them even maybe, and I've seen teachers so committed, wonderful teachers, trying to creatively push in you know, 30 seconds of movement and then move right on. And at some point, you just have to call it and people need a break. I was telling you earlier about the Japanese children and the Finnish and the children in Finland and Turkey. Yeah. And basically, for every 45 minutes of focused attention, they have 15 minutes of unstructured time, a ratio really of 1-3 unstructured time to structured. And nobody is arguing that those children are lagging really far behind U.S. kids.
What are those countries again?
Japan, Finland, and Turkey.
So, yeah, you wouldn't argue. Those are not the bottom of the barrel educational countries. And yet they provide 15 minutes for every 45 minutes. 15 minutes of, again, you called it unstructured time. It could be playtime. It could be relaxation, other things, right?
Yeah. It's children's self-directed time.
Self-directed time.
It read to me as. And again, these days could be longer. The year could be longer. There could be just more time altogether for these kids. But the kids know how to move from unstructured time back in. And one problem that we have is if we never give kids a chance to make choice, play, socialize, and then we give them, sometimes they're not very practiced at it, and that we can't make that transition back. But if we regularly build it in, then not only are they learning during school, but they're learning so much in this unstructured time because they are structuring it. They are intrinsically motivated to make use of that time. And they do, honestly, in many ways, what they need to learn.
What an important skill that is, by the way. If you know you've got 20 minutes and you have to make the use of it, that child's going to learn how to make good use of 20 minutes.
Absolutely.
That's a great life skill. My son knows if he's got an hour at the Strong Museum of Play, he is very motivated. He starts at Wegmans. He gets his five. It's really an amazing thing to watch. We're not going to overemphasize his love of the Wegmans part of the Strong Museum. But anyway, I have a lot of callers waiting, so let's start to get through some of these calls. We're talking about the value of play and watching to see what school districts are doing as there's this emphasis on academic rigor, even in kindergarten and first grade, and cutting back of recess time. Let's grab Jenna in Pittsford. Thanks for calling, Jenna.
One of the things that I hear your guest talking about, and I'm not sure that it's being translated appropriately, is one of the things that you learn from recess or unstructured time is social learning, social communication, how to interact with your peers, and how to translate that. And the object of taking turns, waiting your turn, counting, things like that, that's all learning that takes place in that unstructured time. But that also translates into teenage years and adult years. You know, Jimmy Kimmel has a great example as he's tried to be more creative and also wanted to get more fit and lose weight. He has a treadmill desk that he uses. So he's actually working out while he's preparing for his shows. And there's a school in Minneapolis that I think you alluded to, Evan, where they've put pedals on the desks in schools so that kids can be creative, be active as they're learning. And it's cut down on the attention deficit and the hyperactivity of these kids, but it's also increased their test scores. So there are things that we can do to help our students both be more active and be more playful and be more attentive in the classroom. We're just not employing those tactics as we can. And you know, we have in Pittsburgh, we actually have heard from teachers that, I'm sorry, we've got so much homework and your kids want to be outside playing, but we have to keep them on and we have to keep them working.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Jenna. And how about that point, Debbie? What do you think when you hear parents say, they're hearing from teachers that the teachers don't necessarily want to load them up with homework or send them home with all these things to do, but parents are starting to feel like the amount of workload at home is detracting from a kid's ability to even have unstructured time at home at night.
Right. And also this tendency to push down curriculum, meaning what used to be done in first grade is now being done in kindergarten and so on, where children haven't changed, but our expectations of what they can squeeze into the time when they're in school has changed. So those outcomes in terms of aggressive behavior and negative outcomes were almost predictable. There was a Yale study done in which students were being expelled, four-year-old students being expelled from preschool programs at three times the national rate for kindergarten through 12th grade students. And I don't believe four-year-old students have changed. I believe what they're being expected to do has changed. So also to speak to social skills, the one social skill that when I was a kindergarten teacher I most wanted kids to come to school with was self-regulation, the ability to manage their own behavior. And kids just don't get that if they don't have opportunities to practice it.
And I see you nodding there, Ellen.
Absolutely. I'm so glad this caller logged in on this issue. It is so important. The pedals on the desks, those are all creative ways to get kids moving, but that pure play time that allows kids to practice social skills, the turn-taking, the problem-solving, even calming down, the emotional regulation that Debbie referred to, making friends and making up with friends and, frankly, entering groups, figuring it out what it is you want to do and when and how to do it appropriately. You need lots of practice, and we want kids to understand rules. On the playground, they learn rules from others. They practice rules. They practice the rules they learned in gym. They make up rules. They follow. They lead. They mentor other children. They learn about winning and losing, how to be a good winner and how to be a good loser in some structured games. And it's a language-rich environment. They pass on cultural traditions, clapping. For second language learners, often it's a time when they can speak in their native language, and that's a really important time. That's a break for them. That allows their brain to just stop, and the chemicals actually, I try to understand this, and I'm no brain scientist, but it sounds like that there are actually chemicals that need to sort of circulate in order to refocus in the way that the teachers would like the kids to refocus in order to get through some very challenging tasks.
We're talking to a couple of guests about the issue of play, recess, and the value of physical education. Ellen Leopold is a social and emotional learning consultant with the Children's Institute. Debbie McCoy is the director of education at the Strong Museum here in Rochester. Here's a comment from our Facebook page. Kim writes, "My son in Webster is in kindergarten and only has outside recess on Fridays. They have about 20 minutes per day to have free play in the classroom. Out of a six-hour school day, I think that's insane. Thank God for gym class twice a week. We also do not allow him to spend more than 20 minutes on homework per night. If it takes him longer than that at 5 years old, we scrap it and go outside. Maybe it's bad parenting, but my kids learn more while they're out hiking and exploring than he does doing drudgery and mindless busy work for a five-year-old." That's Kim's comment. And let's grab another caller, Jan in Irondequoit. Thanks for calling Connections. Jan, go ahead.
Hi. One of the things that aggravates me in a way about this conversation is I feel like we're talking about the wrong thing. And what I mean about that is, or what I want to get across is the concept that we're saying, should children have recess or not have resources? And I think recess. And I think everybody agrees children should have recess and have enough time to do what is necessary from an academic standpoint, whatever age they are. I think the real problem is a time issue. It's not a should they or shouldn't they have recess. It's a time issue. And the matter of time is something that school districts don't really look at or address well. And what I mean by that is your average elementary school student is in school for about 1,000 hours a year, about 180 days, and I'm talking full-time, not a two-and-a-half-hour kindergarten or pre-K, is in school for usually 6 hours for about 180 days, which is a little over 1,000 hours a year. Your average parent is working about 2,080 hours per year, with 2 weeks vacation, 2,000 hours per year. What that means is there's about 1,000 hours of every year that most kids are in some kind of care. They're being cared for before school, after school, preschool, and all kinds of summer break, Easter break, Christmas break, winter break, spring break. And as a result, we have a lot of downtime out of school. I really think people should refer to a report out of the U.S. Senate, and I think this goes back to the 80s when Al Gore was in charge of the Senate as Speaker of the House, called A Matter of Time, talking about at a time when city school children actually went to school in the summer. They did that because they weren't needed on the farm. We've done nothing but absolutely reduce our time that children are in school. We're slowly moving the other direction. Finally, kindergartners are getting to the point of a six-hour kindergarten. Notice yesterday, I live in West Rondquoit. Yesterday, I voted for the school budget, but I was actually most happy to see a special proposal that did pass that was to increase to full-day kindergarten and start pre-K programs and the facilities necessary to support them. I'm a huge believer in early childhood education and all forms of education, and in recreation and physical exercise. The reality is there's no reason we can't do it all. There's just no reason. We do not have to stick to a six-hour school day with 2 hours of after-school care. If we're lucky, the after-school care is high quality, and they're getting a lot of physical exercise.
Well, Jan, let me jump in and say, first of all, your superintendent, Jeff Crane, joined me this morning, and in our second hour, we're going to be having an in-depth conversation with him about the school budget there. But before we do that, in our next half hour on this hour, we're going to hear his take on recess and the value of physical education. So there is a geographic tie there. But let me ask our panelists to respond to some of your comments about essentially time management. And I'll start with Ellen. What do you think about what Jan is saying
there? Adding hours. I'd like to see school districts add hours. I'd like all kindergarten to go to 6 instead of 2.5.
Yeah.
And I'd like all children to get pre-K, if not pre-K, to be longer.
Okay, she's saying we can add hours.
Your 2-year-old is you know, ready for social. I'm sure he's in some kind of preschool. It's a wonderful opportunity.
Let's start with Ellen there. And Ellen, one of the points you made earlier was that other countries probably do see longer days, and at least in many other countries.
Yes, they do. And we know that. So, for example, in France, I know families in France and in Spain, and their kids go for very long hours, and they also take amazing school trips, and they have health care in their schools, and it's just a whole different system. It really interesting comments from the caller, but certainly not something that we're going to be able to solve here. So we just have kind of what's on the table. I have to say, in the city school district, they are starting extended learning days, and they are trying to build in more activity after school. I still think that we need to do it throughout the school day, and maybe they're trying to do that as well. They did find that physical activity was higher during free time for children than actually during PE, physical ed. So the kids in gym, you would think they're getting the most exercise, but they actually had more vigorous exercise outside, or even sometimes in unstructured situations inside, than they did in the gym.
And I'm not surprised at that. I remember, and this is not to malign gym that I remember, just that there was a good amount of standing around or sort of waiting, because that's just the way sometimes things build up. So that doesn't surprise me. Jan's point is interesting, that if we're taking away recess or physical education time, maybe the solution, Debbie, is a longer school day, and you work more physical time back into it, but you allow some of this academic rigor and pressure that's growing on teachers and districts.
Well, I'm not sure about a longer school day, but I think it's important to look at what's happening during that time, mm-hmm. and that we see children holistically, that we not just see them as academics, and we're paying attention to supporting development across areas, because when we research supports the idea that when we overemphasize any one area of development, be it academic or any other area, it's often at the expense of the other areas.
We need to take the shortest break in radio, and it is only the shortest break in radio because your pledge dollars help make this a content-driven hour. That's the extent of the pledging I'm going to give you right now. But we're going to take that short break, come right back. If you're on the line waiting to jump into this conversation, stay there. We'll get you. And we're also going to hear from Jeff Crane, West Rondquoit Superintendent, all coming up as we look at the value of physical play for kids here on Connections on Member-Supported Public Radio. Coming up in our second hour, the school budget in one local district got 56% yesterday, but that means it failed. That's because a few districts tried to override the state's property tax cap and needed a supermajority to do it. What comes next for districts that are facing cuts? We'll find out. And we'll talk to Congressman Tom Reed about the Affordable Care Act, the minimum wage, and why sexual assault is such an important issue for him. It's all coming up second hour.
Something like 3% of public company CEOs in this country are women. You want to guess how long it's going to take before that changes?
Women get into college and complete and go to graduate school in increasingly greater rates than men.
Yeah, not so long then, huh? I'm Kai Rizdal, Women in the Corner Office, next time on Marketplace from APM.
This evening at 6:30.
I'm Evan Dawson. Welcome back to Connections, and my news director, Randy Gorbin, is here from WXXI News. This hour is flying by, which just means the content is outstanding, Randy. We've got great guests, as we often do here, and great interaction with our callers.
It's a great subject, and in fact, I think I'm going to implement recess for the newsroom because I like the concept so much.
You are listening. I appreciate it.
It's a great—and, you know, the Strong Museum, of course, is nationally known for really kind of redefining what play is and analyzing what it is and how important it is. And again, the kind of discussion you're going to hear here on Connections with Evan Dawson. Evan, of course, joined us earlier in the year. We've made a very big commitment to improving not only Connections, but all the programming here on WXXI. But, of course, that does take money. And to do that, we need continued support from everybody listening to this program, especially our new folks as well at WEOS. We're doing broader coverage right now during the talk show. We always try to be kind of Rochester-centric in a sense, but really over the several counties that include the greater Rochester area. But we're paying a particular focus right now on parts of the Finger Lakes as well. And if you are listening to us on WEOS, you can show your support by going to WEOS.org and making a contribution, or WXXI.org. Very easy that way to make a donation online. We'd love to have you become a member, a sustaining member, where you just contribute a little bit every month and know that as you're listening that, hey, you know what, I helped pay for that. I helped support that. No matter what the amount is, it really kind of makes you part of our WXXI community. And in the time I've been here, I really am feeling that when we're having an open house later this year, and it's amazing how many hundreds, actually thousands of people show up for that. It's because this station has become such an important part of the community and almost a little sub-community of itself. People who listen, read, watch what we do online, on TV, on the web, and we'd love to have you be a part of it. But to do that, we also need you to support it because, again, funding is always an issue, and we want to continue the great programming that you're hearing today.
Thank you, Randy. Always nice to check in with our news director, Randy Gorbin, there. And again, WXXI.org or WEOS.org to make your contribution and end this pledge drive. We want to end it today. All right, we're talking about the value of physical education and play, maybe even unstructured time for kids, and sort of the vanishing amount of unstructured time for kids during the school day, with Debbie McCoy, the Director of Education for the Strong Museum of Play. The Strong Museum in Rochester has become an institution here, and Ellen Leopold is a social and emotional learning consultant with the Children's Institute. This conversation was sparked by a letter that went out on April 25th, and I mentioned it earlier this hour, but I want to read part of it so you can hear exactly what sparked this. Really, the Washington Post says, conversation around the country. It was in the Elwood School District down on Long Island in New York State. And on April 25th, the district sent this letter to parents. It said, "Dear kindergarten parents and guardians, we hope this letter serves to help you better understand how the demands of the 21st century are changing schools. It is most important to keep in mind that this issue is not unique to Elwood. Although the movement toward more rigorous learning standards has been in the national news for more than a decade, the changing face of education is beginning to feel unsettling for some people. What and how we teach is changing to meet the demands of a changing world. The reason we have eliminated the end-of-year kindergarten show is simple. We are responsible for preparing children for college and career with valuable lifelong skills, and know that we can best do that by having them become strong readers, writers, co-workers, and problem solvers. Please do not fault us for making the professional decisions that we know will never be able to please everyone, but know that we are making these decisions with the interests of all children in mind." Signed, the district leaders there in Elwood. So they're saying this world is changing, and yes, kindergarten, even in kindergarten, they are talking about college preparation. Ellen, a lot of parents thought that was extreme. Did you?
Yes. And And I have to say, I'm in lots of schools and see lots of people trying to continue with the school play. So I don't want that somehow this casts a message that I don't see dramatic play used. But honestly, dramatic play is good, is pedagogically sound. There's been studies that pretend play helps children with recall more than pictures do in a story. And there's actually been a significant study that some Philadelphia schools have sort of evolved off of that say that when kids retell a story, they remember it for some amount of time. Read it to them, they remember it for a week or so. They retell the story, it's a certain amount of time. They act it out, and that could be messy. We stand back, we support that, but they act it out. They're remembering it a year later.
Wow.
And it's such a language-rich activity. It really is language-rich. And so we can work with children's natural desires to be playful and help support their academics.
And let me ask what the director of education at the Strong Museum thinks about that very question about the value. You know, you've got this kindergarten saying, we want these students to be good students, therefore we're taking away play. Whereas Ellen is saying, no, the research says if you want them to be good students, you need to give them a diverse array of education, including play.
Exactly. And what Ellen was saying reminds me of an article, a recent article in the American Journal of Play about a program called Boston Listens by a man named Ben Mardell and others in Boston. And it's storytelling and story acting in Boston kindergarten programs, where reading comprehension, the ability to think in stories, writing, vocabulary development, oral language skills are all supported in this playful way. The ability to think abstractly, all of those skills that are foundational skills for later work in language arts and in math and in science are all supported through play.
Let's get back to the phones. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Bonnie, Rochester, thanks for calling Connections.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. You know, to me, probably others listening, and even from the letter you read, it's pretty clear that it's been, you know, known for years and years and years, the value of play, the value of interaction at all ages, and especially at younger ages. When you have kids who have a lot of energy, and if you don't have both structured and unstructured play activities, you shows up another way. So I think, you know, that's so well established that it raises a question for me, which I think is where the real focus should be, is the broader issue of what is the real role of education that we want to be. And I think what's happening is we're so panicked and understandably in some ways about the future employment issues for people. Students, as they graduate, will they be able to fit into the fewer and fewer jobs that are available? And if that's, people wonder, you know, if that's a concern. There's been a number of articles. There's a recent article in Salon Magazine about that, you know, highlights the issue of education being important, but that's not the total determining factor. It's whether you have a country that supports jobs for people and doesn't use technology to get rid of jobs. So I think people are responding and the system's responding to this kind of panicked situation. It doesn't mean that education doesn't need to make adjustments, doesn't need to improve. A lot of people, especially in urban education, have pointed to the need for reinforcing basic skills, because that's where if you can't read, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. So it's not like it's an interfacing of all these things. So in order to answer these questions about things like recess, we need to refocus the whole dialogue about the broader issue of education, and also how we are going to look at jobs for the future in a way that doesn't say, well, I'm sorry, there's not enough good jobs to go around, so you fend for yourself.
Well, thank you, Bonnie. Bonnie sees it in the larger context. What do you think, Debbie?
Well, I think, too, when we think about what skills are going to be needed for employment in the future, when you talk about 21st century skills, we need to remember skills like problem solving, collaborating with others, all of those important skills that play helps to support.
Ellen made a point before we came on this program that I just loved because I think about my two-year-old. Ellen made the point that said, if you don't give kids breaks, especially pre-K, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, you don't give them breaks, they're going to take breaks anyway, aren't they, Ellen?
Yes, they're going to take those breaks, and it's going to look like inappropriate behavior. But really, it's just how children learn and how children's way of being. They are not it's interesting to think from the caller's perspective of going from 21st century job ready, workforce ready, which is also was part of the letter that these parents received on Long Island. But we really need to give these kids a chance to be kids now. And we have a lot of information about how children learn, ways in which children learn, and we need to work with that. And frankly, we have to have a little bit of trust. I also want to support what Debbie said about things that are needed in the 21st century when they are older. We need people who can get along. We need people who are self-starters. We need people who can calm down. How many adults do you know whose lives have been derailed because so employment's derailed, they can't finish something in education because they can't figure out how to ask for help appropriately, or they can't figure out how to calm themselves down. We need to give them opportunities to learn those skills. And we can't just treat them as little adults. It won't work.
Jackie writes to us, please don't blame the teachers. I am a teacher. We feel such little control over the time in our day and all of the things that we have to do about this. You're nodding right away, Debbie. What do you think?
That's an important point. I think there are just new pressures on teachers and principals and administrators that we do need to acknowledge.
They feel like they don't even have time for recess. And, you know, it's easy for me to sit on the outside and say, what a mistake they're making. But, you know, that letter that we heard from the Elwood School District, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm saying that it is indicative of the fact that there is a lot of pressure. And they're feeling that pressure, and they don't know what to do in some cases other than to start cutting what they think is the fat. And I guess what we're hearing this hour is that if we look at unstructured playtime and recess as the fat, we could be making a pretty big mistake. I do want to hear from one of our local superintendents. I had a chance this morning to talk to Jeff Crane, who is the superintendent of the West Irondequoit School District. We're going to hear from him at length next hour about the budget vote, but I took the opportunity to ask him a question about the issue of recess, and he had some interesting things to say about that. Let's listen to his comments about recess.
We are, I believe, one of the only districts that allow for recess grades K through 12. Yes, even high school kids can leave their 42-minute lunch period after a certain time and go into the gym to do some play if they so desire, or outside, depending on the instructor's ability to allow for that. But we have, and we will continue to have, because it's so important to any young child, older child, to have that play, have that relaxation, have that physical exercise. The research will show you that assists in the cognitive learning. So we are supportive of it, and every class, every grade level in our district is able to enjoy some form of recess every day. I know from my reading that in districts across the state that there has been pressure to do that because of the academic demands. We try to meet the academic demands in a way that allows the student to best achieve that, and we believe that physical exercise is necessary for that.
That's Jeff Crane, the superintendent of West Irondequoit Schools, and I don't think he's going to get much dissent from the people in the room on that.
Absolutely not. And the caller, the teacher, I think her name was Jackie, is, mm-hmm. is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Jackie, I want you to know that we, the people who go out from the Children's Institute and into classes all the time, we see how hard you're working, and we know that you know these issues at least as well as we do, and you have all the respect from certainly me, but I think also people at the Children's Institute and the people in this room right now. We understand that you are working incredibly hard and trying to creatively use time whenever possible to give kids opportunities to move and socialize. We also understand that you don't have the flexibility that you used to have. 20 years ago, when I had a second grader, the teacher started the day with social time for the kids, saying, you know, they can self-select, they can spend time alone if it's been stressful on the bus, and otherwise they're going to spend the whole morning trying to get that time. She would not have that choice anymore. I don't believe she would have that choice to decide to let kids socialize well beyond the bell and the beginning of the day.
Here's a comment from Emily on Twitter. She says, as a family doctor and a mother, I am appalled by the loss of free play in our kids' lives. This is where real learning happens. So let me ask Debbie McCoy, the director of education at the Strong Museum. You have an educational setting, a pre-K setting there, and you have to make choices on how you want to structure a pre-K student's and child's day. How do you do it? Tell us about the school. This is a great opportunity to kind of learn how your thought process works.
I'd be happy to. The Woodbury School at the Strong is a school for children ages 3 to 5, and we use an approach that's very playful called the Reggio Emilia approach. It's based on the work of the municipal preschools in Reggio Emilia, Italy, and it's an emergent curriculum approach. So it really puts the mission of the Strong into action, showing the importance of play in children's lives and the connection between play and learning. Children have opportunities to make choices, to pursue topics that are of interest to them, and to learn in an very interdisciplinary way.
Take me through a typical day for a Woodbury school student.
That's a tough one, but the museum is our classroom. So as you can imagine, both indoors and outdoors, there are so many opportunities. When children first come, after a celebration of being together and acknowledging each child by name, we hear about some of the opportunities for the day. So it may be going into the butterfly garden to study beetles, or it may be going outdoors to be in the discovery garden. Frequently, children are very interested in the aspects of the natural world or other aspects of the exhibits at the Strong Museum. So no 2 days look alike. It's a 2.5-hour program either twice a week, 3 times a week, or 5 times a week for older students.
And for parents who might have just missed briefly, the name of the educational model is what? And from Italy, what's the name of the model?
It's the Reggio Emilia approach.
And why did you decide it works or is a good model to follow?
It's because it's play-based and it's project-based. Mm-hmm. So it really supports the mission of the Strong.
We just got to have a few minutes left here, and I want to ask Ellen Leopold, who is a social and emotional learning consultant with the Children's Institute, just for some thoughts. Now, anything that we've missed this hour, anything that your research and that your work has helped you see over the decades that says we're missing this? I'd love to hear a good way to kind of wrap it up here, because we've talked research and we've talked recent trends, but what do you think?
Last year, I was visiting a kindergarten class and reading a book, and it was on social emotional skills. But it was just a regular book, and there was an issue that came up on the recess, on the playground during recess, between a couple of the characters, and one child raised his hand and said, "What's recess?" And he was in kindergarten, but half the year had gone by, and it occurred to me then that we're trying to get all this other language in, but something that was really basic to my background, what I did growing up, what my kids had, and what I think teachers and educators want, this child had not, that language wasn't there for him. But of course, I think that we need to just quickly, if we have a minute, to talk about...
You've got 90 seconds, so go ahead.
40% of the children in this community, in the city of Rochester, are overweight or obese. Gates, Greece, and Irondequoit have similar statistics. A third of children who were overweight in kindergarten were obese by eighth grade. We have all these on and on in statistics about how our children are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. and now we're trying to, and also we know there are long-term effects to that. And at the same time, we're taking out movement and ability to move. And I'm not saying that, that just movement is going to cut down on that. That's for better minds than mine to sort of figure out. But we somehow have to incorporate in school for academics and just for health, movement and unstructured play. And the woman who is the pediatrician, the American Academy of Pediatrics, has said that we need recess.
I didn't even get a chance. That's how packed this hour has been. I didn't even get a chance to get to that part of the American Academy of Pediatrics. They did indeed. Next time we talk, maybe we'll revisit this in the summer when teachers have a little more time to come in and talk to us, because we don't mean to malign teachers. And 15 seconds, Debbie, closing thoughts from you from the Strong Museum.
Well, we just need to keep in mind that play is the important work of young children.
The important work of young children. I think I've seen that phrase there at the Strong Museum. Debbie, thanks for taking the time to join us there from the Strong Museum. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Ellen Leopold with the Children's Institute, thank you for sharing your expertise and time.
Thank you.
And for all of our parents, teachers listening who joined the conversation, and for those joining us online at Twitter and Facebook, we do appreciate it. And maybe spend one more hour with us, or maybe listen in your earbuds and get out and move a little bit next hour. Congressman Tom Reed is next on Connections. We'll see you then on Member Supported Public Radio next hour.